This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us Alison Milden,
Maurice Clark,
and I'm Vicky Marie Buchanan. So welcome back, Maurice and Alison. And last episode we were talking about your school. You'd got to Freiburg High School, you were in the professional course. Are there significant times in your teenage years that you want to share, talk about, that you remember from that time?
Well, I remember not being a terribly social teenager because we lived out in the country and Dad was the only person that drove. So being able to go out and do things with friends was almost impossible because you were reliant on your parent to get you in and out of town, because it was like 15 kilometres out of town. Didn't have my own bicycle.
We had
one bicycle between the four of us
girls,
and it was my mother's old bicycle, so you can imagine what it was like. It was a really solid, heavy bicycle. But I did ride it into town once or twice. lived to tell the tale. And I do remember vividly one day riding that bicycle. I was going down to a neighbour's place about a mile down the road because I was minding the cats and keeping an eye on the chooks and things while they were away. It was a really windy day, and I was a very skinny teenager. And on the way to the house, I had a tailwind. That was wonderful.
Yes.
Zipped down the road. That mile went so fast it wasn't funny. Coming back, the headwind was such that I ended up getting blown backwards off the bicycle and had to get off the bike and walk the rest of the way home if I wanted to get home alive. So socially, it was very, very limited for myself and my three sisters because unless our friends were able to come out, we didn't see them outside of school at all. Actually, in your teenage years, it does create some problems because that's the time that you're supposed to be building your relationships and making your networks and things like that. I had one very good friend whose brother worked out at Himatangi at the radio station.
I remember that.
When on his in the school holidays and things like that, on his way out to work, he would drop my friend Elizabeth off and she'd spend the day and then pick her up on the way back into town. But that was the only way we could actually interact outside of school.
And we didn't have cell phones.
No.
You know, bikes. Did your mother's bike have a net over the wheel? You know, they had nets over the wheel, didn't they, to stop the dresses?
No, it didn't have a net over the wheel, but it had a wicker basket on the front that wobbled around all over the place. And it was built like a tank. it was heavy, very, very heavy.
And I note, too, you talked about a mile. You know, you rode a mile, whereas it's changed, you know, now it's kilometres, isn't it?
1.5 kilometres down the road. No, it was a mile. And interestingly, I know we moved over to the metric system around about 1967, 68, I think. I still, to this day, work between the two systems because, you know, I started my schooling in Imperial and then there was that crossover period. And to this day, I still think of some things in Imperial, they make more sense to me, and some things in metric, and I find I can easily convert between the two, whereas my younger colleagues at work, they cannot do those conversions at all.
Our wisdom as we've aged.
Well, the interesting thing is, though, I would have only been about six or seven when we did start that changeover. I remember the changeover to decimal currency, and then the introduction of the new measuring systems.
You were talking as well about some key things that affected you personally too, about some friends that they died tragically.
Very young years. There was one who had been all through primary school with, and he had his pilot's license, and he had an accident on the desert road. His plane went into the desert road and he died. He was just... He was a little older than I was, so when the accident happened, he would have been perhaps about 19, 20,
right.
Was not long out of high school. And
right.
You know, it was really... And it was sad because he was an only child.
Oh.
You know, very much wanted only child. And it was just the shock of somebody could be here one day and gone the next, and around about the same time, probably within about 1 to 2 weeks of that, another young one died. She was someone that regularly travelled in on the school buses.
Right.
With us, she went to a different school, but you build up friendships travelling in and out. And she came from Rongatea, and she was out riding her bike in Rongatea, and a cattle truck went through. And in those days, the cattle trucks would travel very quickly, and
right.
there's that sucking action.
Yeah.
She got sucked in under the truck, and her legs were severed, and she died.
Yeah.
You know, and she died a couple of days later after the accident. She was only about 16, and you know, she was a really vibrant young woman. And to have the two of them, her and John, gone just like that, and then not long after that, my best friend's brother, he was only 21, died suddenly. We found out years later he had an undiagnosed heart defect. He didn't know, nobody knew. And that was really, really shocking, because you know, these were all moving closer and closer to home. And then and these were my first real experiences of young people death.
Yeah,
because I come from a family where death was sort of swept under the carpet, and the kids weren't involved. And I remember not being able, you know, a few years earlier when my grandfather and godfather and great-grandmother all died within a very short space of each other. I would have been about 12 at the time. And just being totally excluded from the whole process.
Yes.
And when going back to my friend's brother, I went to his funeral, and against my mother's wishes, and I remember getting dropped off home by another friend's mum, and my mother was angry that I'd gone against her. How dare I? And got accused of being morbid because I had gone to a funeral, whereas it was about being there for my friend and her family.
You
know them all, and yeah, unbeknownst to my mum, I'd actually gone to John's funeral as well. I'd bunked off school for one of the only times in my life. Walked from Freiburg High School down to All Saints Church.
Wow.
Really fast.
Yeah.
And gone to his funeral. Yes. I remember his one. It was huge. That church was full.
Big church.
It was all of boys' high school was there, because he hadn't long left the high school. And then... within my last year at high school and my first year of nursing, my 14-year-old cousin was diagnosed with leukemia. And so for my first year of nursing, I had my cousin in the oncology ward of the hospital mostly, and that was a really strange experience, because I knew through my work what was happening with him, but because of privacy issues, I couldn't discuss anything with anybody, even my nursing classmates, and I knew that my cousin was dying. My aunt was telling everyone that he was getting better, and I couldn't say anything.
Yes.
And it was really Yeah, he died sort of partway through my first year of nursing. He was only 15.
Yeah.
And back in those days, there was not the means available now to treat the acute myeloid leukemias that, back then it was a death sentence within less than 12 months, which is what happened with him. But I think one of the sad things that with that was, you learn how inhumane people or society can be, because he had become ill and he was at another high school in town.
Mm. Mm.
And he was not so well, and it was the cross country day at the school,
yes.
And he'd said, "Look, I'm too unwell to do this."
Yes.
They thought he was trying to shirk the cross country, and this was before he got just a couple of days before he was diagnosed. They thought he was trying to shirk the cross country, so they made him go and pick stones up off the tennis court.
Yeah.
And 2 days later, he was in hospital with the diagnosis.
And
that, when you think of it now, just that, it was cruel.
Yes,
But that kind of thing still happens to kids at school. They're not necessarily believed when something is wrong.
It's true.
Mm. And, so...
It's a reminder to us all, isn't it, really, to really listen and have that compassion and understanding and belief in humanity as well.
Did those experiences make you more determined to be a nurse, or question if being a nurse was going to be too tough?
I think particularly with my cousin, it made me more determined, because by that time I was in the nursing course, because I'd gone straight from high school into the program, and I did my training in the hospital system, not in the polytech. The year that I started, which was 1980, was the year that the comprehensive course started here in Palmerston North. So it was already running down in Wellington at that point. And I'd gone down to Wellington with another of my high school friends and checked out the program down there. And we had both decided, no, we were not going to go down to the Wellington Polytech, because there was these very opinionated young women, and they were the students at the time, and they were, and I remember thinking, just based on the way they were behaving and the way they were talking to us, my goodness, if this is what the polytechnic course produces, this is not the kind of nurse that I want to be.
Right. Good to hear that.
And so Erin and I both came back here to Palmerston North, and we went to the hospital school of nursing here, because that was still running.
Right.
And she was a year ahead of me in there, so she went off. I still was at high school. I stayed till the seventh form. That was a battle too, to actually get to stay in the seventh form. And then I went on the year after that, so I started in 1980.
So the hospital course, when you were in-house at the hospital, is that 3 years? Or tell us a little bit about the course, that 3.5 years.
Yeah, 3.5 years, not 3 academic years, 3.5 years. And it was like an apprenticeship kind of system where you learnt a lot of it on the job. So we would have block courses in the School of Nursing at the hospital.
Right.
And so your first block course was a 12-week one right at the very beginning of your training.
Mm.
And that was entertaining, because it was all about getting introduced to nursing, and you were gradually introduced to your role as a nurse.
Yeah.
And one of the first things that they get you to do, we would have been there about 4 weeks by the start.
Right.
Put on your uniforms. Nurse, you're going over to the wards and you're going to give out the morning teas. Right? Now, no, looking back now, I can see exactly why that was done, because yeah. that is forcing you to interact with people yes. that you've yes. never yes. met before. Yeah. And I mean, we were all only 17, 18 yes. years yeah. of age.
Yeah.
There was one girl in the class who was 21. We thought she was really old,
yeah.
but she yeah. already had a degree. She'd gone to university and then decided to come nursing. And anyhow, so off we go in our little white uniforms, my friend Joanna and I. to the medical ward, and we arrived to complete and utter chaos on the ward. It was a typical medical ward morning.
Right.
And here's us two, green as grass, little prelim nurses. Still, we've been sent to do the morning teas. Oh, well, I'm far too busy. I'm sorry, it's just one of those mornings. The kitchen's down there. Off you go. And right off, so we go down to the kitchen. And I mean, luckily for me, I knew my way around a kitchen because of the Women's Institute.
You're right, right.
Mum used to go to the Women's Institute.
You're right,
and
right.
we, as kids, would quite often get sent to the kitchen to do the kitchen duties.
Right.
So we'll go into the kitchen. Oh, yeah, there's a zip, there's yes, a trolley, yes. there's the cups. But it probably took Joanna and I twice as long to find everything. So that's all right. We got the trolley set up. We got everything on it. And we headed off out into the ward to do the cups of tea. And, you know, walk into the first room. And there's four women in there. And Jo and I look at each other and righto, you walk up yeah. to the first one. Would you like a cup of tea? Thank goodness she was just totally compass mentis. Yeah. Yes, yes, please, I'll have tea. You know, right, get that. Go to the next one. And I look. And I look. So did you? I think she's dead.
Oh, no.
I look again. She's not breathing.
Oh, no.
What are we going to do? I think I'll go and find a nurse. So went and found a more senior nurse yeah. than me. I think we've got a dead lady in this room. She comes down, she looks good. Yes, I think I'd better draw the curtains. Righto, girls, carry on. We carried on with our round. So this was indicative the yes, kind of morning yes, it was
yes,
on this
yes,
ward.
Yeah.
And we, so Joanna and I carried on, and by the time we'd got to the end of our cup of tea round, which was probably three times as long as anyone else had ever done it, there had been two other deaths on the ward.
Oh my gosh.
So the staff were just absolutely pushed. So guess what our next job was?
Laying out a body.
Laying oh, yeah. out of the dead.
Yes, 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 yes.
And, you know, we'd been there like 1 month yes. straight out of school. But the thing was, she and I were put, you know, we were with a senior
yes.
Student because yes. there was this teaching culture amongst the nursing. And to this day, I still lay out the dead how I was taught yes. by this more senior student nurse. And she was just so respectful of it. And that's how I've taught everybody yes. since.
Yeah. Mm.
Our tutors were horrified to find out what we'd been doing, because that was a little bit above and beyond what they'd expected us to do on our first foray into the ward.
But it's real, isn't it? That's the difference between learning on site mm-hmm. and learning in the classroom, yes,
absolutely.
Isn't it? That's the difference.
And
yeah.
I mean, for me, okay, I'd come from a farming background. At least I knew the difference yes. between alive and dead.
Yes.
my poor Joanna, she was new out from England.
Oh.
They had only immigrated, her family, about a year before she came
right.
nursing. So
yes.
it was a little bit of a culture yeah. shock for poor Jo.
Poor but, Jo. But, so from there, so you did your 4 weeks basic, and then...
Then there was another 8 weeks after
right.
that, so building up to going on your first clinical placement in the wards.
Mm.
And so you did the 12-week prelim block, then you went out for a 6-week clinical placement.
Mm.
But during that prelim block, you did little bits of practical stuff.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
So there were times when you were in the class, times when you were partly out
yes.
on the ward,
yeah.
like the infamous tea run.
Yeah.
And so when you went to the ward, you had a bit of an idea about what you were supposed to do and how
yes.
you were supposed to do it. And the charge nurses in those days, well, they were called sister, they knew what level everybody was, and so the expectations and your workloads and everything were appropriate to what you would. They were sort of appropriate.
Yeah, from laying out.
There's nothing like being dropped in it and having to learn things. But there was a real teaching culture amongst the staff, which I don't see to the same extent now. I think that support of colleagues is something that has really been lost with the shift to the more academic teaching system for nursing. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some amazing staff out there, but there's been these big attitudinal shifts about whose responsibility it is to guide, support and teach. So we did 6 weeks out and then back in block for another 3 weeks and then another 6. And so that's how the courses went. In those block courses, we looked at different systems and things like that, and so in the first year you did your basic systems and things. I had amazing anatomy and physiology tutor in Shirley Kinsella. Oh, she was, I tell you what, if anyone came out of Shirley's classes not knowing their anatomy and physiology, it was their own fault. She just had that ability to teach and to engage classes. And at the time that I started my nursing, Massey University began their undergraduate degree for registered nurses.
Right.
Now, that was for those who were already registered who wanted to transition to have a Bachelor of Nursing, because then that put them on a similar level to what the qualification that the Polytechnic students would have.
Right.
So, yes, the Polytech course has been going over 40 years now.
Wow. Doesn't seem like it, does it?
It started, but yes, it's interesting. And then, of course, it's all progress. But the real thing that came out of my experience in the nursing program in the hospital system was, it enabled someone like me, who came from a background where there was no history of anyone going on to higher education, to go into a profession. Because if I had had to fund my way through the university or through the Polytech, I could not have done it, because we did not have the financial ability to do it. Going into a hospital-based program where you worked and were paid during your training program meant that you could have greater diversity within your workforce. So if that hadn't been available, I probably would never have been able to go into nursing. And I see that's one of the biggest barriers now for people wanting to enter the profession is the cost.
The cost.
Financial cost of going into it. So it makes it incredibly difficult for some people to break out of their circumstances.
It really
does. And I don't think we should be putting those kind of barriers in front of people. And you know, you can say, "Oh yeah, well they can get a student loan." It's a huge thing. And you've got to have the knowledge to negotiate your way through all of that red tape to get your student loan.
Yes.
And if you're coming from a family that doesn't have the education background to be able to do that, this is hard work.
No, very true.
And so I think we are doing our young people a grave disservice nowadays by not having the kinds of programs I had. I think, to be honest, they threw the baby out with the bathwater when they shifted it. They made this total break and shifted it. Everything in there. I think there needs to be a mixture, and I would fully support students being paid for their placements, because they work hard.
They do work hard. They still have you still hear about the difficulties, don't you, of them working so, so hard, and you wonder if they're truly, truly valued about the work and what they do, by golly.
It depends on who they get to work with.
Yes, yeah, very true. Yeah.
And then
very true.
It was the same with teaching.
Yes.
Teachers College, you were paid to be a student, but there was an obligation at the end of it that you got your training,
yes.
Then you worked,
yes.
And it was three years.
Paid off your bond, that's right.
And actually it's really interesting because people don't realise that the nursing course when it was run in the hospitals was 3.5 years.
Yes.
So by the time we had registered, we'd almost done 4 years.
Yes.
And we came out with a, what is nowadays called a hospital certificate. But interestingly, I think the work we were expected to do was certainly on a fairly reasonable academic level.
Definitely.
And I know that during our course that several of our tutors were doing university study, and so they were bringing through into the course what they were learning out at the university.
Well.
So we were getting high-level stuff. And, I mean, we used to also, on our block courses, it wasn't just nurses giving us our lectures.
Mm.
Our registrars and consultants would come
as well.
The specialists in the areas. So we had all of our conditions were taught to us by our medical colleagues. So
we were
being taught at the level of the med students.
Yes.
And I've never forgotten a really, really amazing session during our neurological block, which is where we did all of our psych stuff as well. At the time, Mason Jury was the head of psychiatry at Palmerston North Hospital, so we got all of our psych stuff taught by
directly
Mason Jury.
Rich.
And one of the most useful sessions that I've ever come across in my 40-plus years of nursing was the one that he and the late Reverend Hapai Winiata did about looking at the Māori perspective of health and wellness, and that they're looking at the psychological component there, the importance of the wairua,
right.
Hinenaro in health and well-being, and it was colloquially referred to as Māori sickness. That was what Mason Jury called it, and that lecture of his and Hapai Winiata's has come through all my career with me, and it's impacted significantly.
This is part 3. Listen next week for part 4.
Thank you for listening to Manawatū Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatū People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatū Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.